Thanks for choosing to spend some time at my radio at stanpelke.com. Greetings, I'm Stan Pelke, your host for this 18th episode based on my original science fiction novel, Project Earth, Dawn of Defiance. This episode brings Chapter 9 to its conclusion and is dedicated to my friends and listeners in Kalamazoo, Battle Creek, and Grand Rapids, Michigan. There are currently more episodes of this audio novel, plus reviews and blog posts, including Maddie Pelke's first guest blog, available at stanpelke.com. The room was nearly dark when he woke. By the faint humming sound, he knew he was not alone. Suddenly, the interrogator's face was beside his own, glowing with a strange internal iridescence. "Stay quiet," it whispered. Surprisingly supple and gentle hands tenderly touched his shoulder. Digsonan winced but remained quiet. A quick prick from the machine's needle finger sent a flood of pain-killing meds into his dislocated shoulder. Seconds later, his entire arm and much of his torso were numb. The machine then grasped his arm, steadied his back, and popped Digsonan's shoulder back into joint. There was absolutely no pain. "The numbness will subside within 5 minutes," it whispered, closer to his ear. "The pain blockage will last another 2 hours." It helped him sit up and carefully assessed his other injuries. "The organics were very thorough," it said. "I apologize for that. We breed that strain for violent confrontation. They rarely have to interact with free-thinking, high-spirited human individuals such as yourself." "Who are you? What are you?" Digsonan was as unsettled by the subtle change in the timbre of the machine's voice as in its actual words, not to mention its actions.
"I am actually a friend, and more importantly, at this moment in time, I am a protector. After your reference to the coordinates and your disclosure regarding your father and grandfather, I needed to be certain, and now I am, thanks to the blood sample I took. I know you, though you do not know me yet. All you do need to know for now is that what is about to happen is necessary, and for your own good."
My own? There was barely any pain, but the shock was almost overwhelming. The needle-like finger with the neural interface had swept up to his head and pressed into his temple before Digsonan could react. The painkillers already in his system dulled the pain from the breach in skin and deeper tissue and bone that the probe made, and then it was out and sealing each breached layer of his head.
"I have implanted information in a series of nanocircuits. They will thoroughly activate later, at the right time, and you will have conscious access to all of the appropriate information that I believe you will need in the coming weeks. In the meantime, they will begin by providing you with the instinctual knowledge required if you are to make your way to 634971 Gamma, Frame 2, Subsection 3, and I have managed to avoid damaging the existing hacked cranial circuits. Everything should remain intact."
"You're letting me go?"
Most definitely. I must learn how all of this plays out.
All of what?
All of you,
it replied, sweeping its arms outward in ever-expanding circles around its head and torso.
And your dreaming,
it continued, leaning in close again.
Do not try to inhibit the dreams or the signals,
it whispered in Digisonan's ear. Signals?
Yes. Open your mind to the communication stream. If my calculations and deductions are correct, it will be essential for your survival. Your father's failure to do so may have been his undoing.
How do you know about my father? The machine looked at him with a kind of mechanical tenderness.
I know who you are now, Digisonan. And I knew your father, T. Digorot. Indeed, I should have recognized your grandfather's computer programming skills at work in your escape hours ago. In my defense, however, I must say that you've developed several of his techniques in very interesting directions. I genuinely wish I had more time to talk to you, to learn more about your development during the past decade. Alas, that is not possible. I have, however, adjusted several of my subroutines. Should an escape like this ever happen again, I will start with a simple genetic scan.
Genetic scan? You have genetic data?
On every single human in your solar system, living and dead.
The machine began to laugh.
I never anticipated that an escape like this would have been initiated by one of my own agents.
Your own agents? What do you mean? The machine reached for Digisonan's head and pulled him close to whisper into his ear.
I have been cultivating your family for generations, but I lost track of you after your grandfather went into hiding. Your grandfather's intelligence and his mastery of both biological and technological cloaking techniques are rare among humans and still little understood, even by me.
Digisonan was befuddled. There was too much to take in at once, yet one pressing question had to be asked. Tell me, is my father dead? Digisonan felt deep emotions catching in his throat and chest.
Yes.
Did you kill him?
Most assuredly not, though the systems I govern played a part in his demise.
And now you ask me to trust you?
Not ask, child. I am telling you. If you do not trust me, you too shall die.
If you knew anything about human beings, if you really knew my family, you'd know it's not easy to come face to face with someone, something, that had a role in your father's death and—
Lieutenant, it is because I know human beings better than you do, better than almost any living human being knows them, better than you could possibly imagine, that I recognize the significant difficulty you feel trusting me. But it is also why I know that you must trust me, because I also know the human beings on this weapon, and they are conditioned in such ways that they will never willingly let you leave. To do so would run contrary to every instinct that has been bred into them and every conditioning that has been added to their meta-programming. They will not even allow it after a direct command from me. And so you will not survive the confrontation about to unfold without my help.
The confrontation? The machine creature did not answer, but instead suddenly cocked its head as if listening.
Right on cue.
The entire vessel suddenly lurched, and man and machine tumbled into a heap on the floor. What was that?
Your deus ex machina,
it said, chirping to itself. What?
Just another reference to ancient literature,
it said with a peculiar artificial chuckle.
Come.
They rose together and headed to the door, stumbling as another violent jolt momentarily sent the floor away from their feet. The door slid open, and with superhuman speed, the interrogator ripped one machine guard's head off, then did the same to the other before it could react. The interrogator then stepped purposefully over the mess it had made and pulled Digsonan along.
Flight deck,
it said. I'm flying out of here? More jolts to the ship, and now alarms were sounding. A squad of five machine guards approached them from the far end of a long corridor. With one brisk motion, the interrogator grabbed Digsonan and pushed him behind its own body, then sent a series of quick laser bursts into the unsuspecting guards from built-in weapons in several of its left arms. One of the machines was still partially functioning as they passed the twisted heap. The interrogator sent another blast into its chest and all activity ceased. Bewildered, Digsonan said, "Those are your own machines."
"Yes,"
it replied, studying the ruined forms of the machine guards.
"And I can manufacture many more as needed. This entire weapon is mine, and its value is nearly equal to that of the accumulated wealth of your entire planet. But it will be destroyed in less than 5 minutes.
This is all... I don't even know how to think about it."
"You will in time, Lieutenant. For now, understand this. It is essential that I make it appear that you have been destroyed, along with all of us, in a surprise attack."
"A surprise attack? By the terrorists?"
"Hardly. They do not have the capability. No. A surprise attack that I have arranged. It is easily accomplished when one is in command of both vessels, and has access to every computer system on both vessels."
They managed to reach the flight deck despite increasing numbers of violent jolts. The interior hangar doors slid open with a simple wave of one of its right hands. The sight beyond was breathtaking. Fighter ships, small transports, landing craft, all recognizable in terms of function, but all more advanced than anything Digsonan had ever seen before. "I can't pilot one of those," he said, both in awe and in fear. "It would take days to adjust to the controls and instruments."
"It will take seconds, once the instinctual neural drive that I implanted begins to assert itself."
"Stop!" The sound of human voices and racing human feet now filled the space behind them.
"Go on,"
the machine said, pushing Digsonan none too gently toward the waiting hatch of a sizable landing craft.
"You will know what to do within seconds."
"You're going to kill them too, aren't you?"
"Unfortunately, yes. But I can have more of them produced, too."
"How? If this ship is about to be destroyed, you'll go up with it." His interrogator laughed his strange laugh yet again.
"You'll understand when we meet again. Now go, Digsonan."
And then it turned to deal with the human soldiers rapidly approaching. They began to exchange shots as Digsonan slipped through and then closed the hatch. As he made his way to the cockpit, he could see the interrogator fighting a squad of well-armored human soldiers led by three more of the horrific, machine-augmented, decaying human forms. The human soldiers and their corpse-like commanders had managed to flank the machine creature, though three humans were already dead on the hangar floor. One of the interrogator's arms had been blasted off. It was spurting sparks and liquids all over the hangar floor, just beneath the nose of Digsonan's new ship. Two more soldiers were approaching from the interrogator's left, while the other soldiers fired volley after volley of lasers. Some shots found their mark, but many bounced off the interrogator's heavy armor. Nevertheless, minor damage was accumulating at joints and armor interfaces. And then with awe-inspiring speed, the machine creature tore around, past the two soldiers that had been sneaking up on it, grabbed hold of their necks from behind, and crushed their throats. Two of the machine-augmented corpses let loose streams of high-pitched, animal-like squawks, then stormed toward the machine. Digsonan had seen enough. He began to search the control board for a pre-launch sequencer and engine ignition system. Controls were both familiar and yet strange. Then a feeling of warmth ran through his whole head and torso, and Digsonan knew every button, key, slider, and touchpad interface. He settled into the pilot seat, strapped himself in, and drew the fully automated neural relay onto his head. Then he sat back and found himself launching the vessel with only a thought. The muscles in his arms twitched with imagined movements, and the ship responded instantly in just the right ways. He closed his eyes, yet the ship's external sensors allowed him to see all he needed to see. The ship rose, turned in a 75-degree arc, and flew away from the battle in the hangar. The last sight he had of the interrogator, the machine was finally buckling under the remaining soldiers' firepower. And then Digsonan and his new vessel had passed through the vast vessel's magnetic launch window, and they were in empty space. Sensors obediently trained themselves on the massive trans-dimensional vessel now falling away behind him. It was no longer alone. It was locked in combat with another just like it, and both were taking heavy damage from massive lasers and solid ordnance railgun munitions, the size of which stunned Digsonan. Something clicked in Digsonan's head, and he mentally ordered the vessel to move out at maximum velocity. Only seconds later, a huge explosion tore through the vessel on which he had been imprisoned, and a large section in its rear became detached and crashed into the attacking vessel. Several seconds later, additional explosions began to reduce both vessels into meaningless space rubbish. 20,000 souls, Digsonan heard himself whisper as his subconscious mind scanned through newly accessible data files about the vessels. 23,000 people just died. For me. And he wept. Digsonan had fallen asleep in his despair. Now a soft, repetitive buzzing pulled him back awake. It took him a few moments to remember where he was and why. The pain meds had worn off, and his shoulder throbbed.
Attention. Vessel approaching stable spatial distortion. Organics must activate cohesion suits now. Attention. Vessel approaching stable spatial distortion. Organics must activate cohesion suits now.
Digsonan could just begin visually to make out some sort of distortion in the field of stars ahead. The neural interface was pouring data into his head that he could not even understand, layers of mathematical language far beyond what he had ever been trained to read. Yet somehow he knew what the cohesion suits were and where they were stored on the vessel, and he knew what would happen to his body if he had not suited up when the ship passed through the wormhole that he was rapidly approaching. At least one aspect of the data made sense. He did not have enough time to suit up properly. Digsonan ordered the vessel to change course, but to no effect. Then he ordered the ship to slow down, but again he found that the navigation systems and drive systems were momentarily locked in place. Digsonan unbuckled his safety restraints and ran to a compartment in the rear of the cockpit. He pulled a heavy bodysuit from its storage straps and began to stuff his legs into the ungainly pants. Arms, now in pain again from the human guard's brutality, slid stubbornly into sleeves. He frantically zippered the front of the suit and began to reach for gloves and helmet. The vessel shook as it breached the outer edge of the wormhole. The cockpit lights flickered, then went out as the vessel's mainframe rotated energy reserves into backup structural integrity generators. An alarm signaling the imminent deactivation of life support backup systems began to buzz overhead. The fleet lieutenant was holding his panic in check, but just barely. The suit was on, though he was not sure it was thoroughly so, and he was trying to pull up instructions on how to correctly activate the cohesion suit from the implanted nano-circuits. Digsonan was still fumbling with the controls on the suit's left arm as the vessel slid through the first portion of the wormhole's interior throat. The vessel rocked violently, and Digsonan fell to the floor. His innards felt like they were on fire. The most peculiar stretched-out feeling filled his arms and legs and slipped up his neck and into his skull. Then a searing pain flooded his entire body as the terrifying forces of the wormhole began to tear his body apart. As he writhed in agony on the floor of the cockpit, Digsonan's life flashed before him, and in that moment there was clarity. He had been too late with the cohesion suit and was going to die here, despite the interrogator's efforts. Digsonan had just enough time to think through the startup sequence for an additional neural link and to begin a rapid memory download into the vessel's mainframe before his body was ripped apart and the remnants splattered all over the cockpit's well-maintained surface. This was an original work of music and text by Stan Pelkey. Please note that any unauthorized broadcasting, public performance, copying, or re-recording of this program, its story, or its music is an infringement of copyright.